Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hello, Tater, doing good. How are you doing?
I am doing all right.
All right.
It's hot as hell outside. Did you have anything good to drink this week?
It is hot. It is hot. You were right about that. As a matter of fact, yes, I've been wanting to try something. I've been seeing the advertisements on TV, and I just want to know if it was as good as it looked, because, you know, a lot of times commercials can deceive you, but I had to try it. So I got a bottle of that De Sonora Velvet. Have you seen that? It's a white bottle, and it's actually a white drink.
De Sonora?
Yeah.
It's De Sonora Velvet. That.
Yeah, and I've been seeing it, and it looks so good. And in the commercial, they just pour it right out of the bottle over ice and sip on it. So I wanted to try that, and it is actually very good. I have greatly enjoyed it. Then they also had a recipe for the espresso martini with that. However, what was really weird about that compared to most other espresso martinis is there is no espresso or coffee in it.
Interesting.
It's like 3 ounces of the De Sonora Velvet, 1 ounce of Kahlua, and 1 ounce of vodka.
Oh, so it's more like a White Russian.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, so now I did try it. I kind of experimented around with it. I did not know it when I got that and brought it home that somebody had relieved me of all my vodka. I had no vodka. I did have some just plain Bacardi's white rum, so I tried that instead. And that was pretty good. And then I made one more of them, and I added an ounce of iced coffee as well to it. And that gave it a little bit more of a coffee flavor. I actually liked that a little bit better. But that stuff is really good. I mean, it's good just to pour over ice and sip on. So,
is there dairy in it? Do you know?
I don't know. I didn't really look to see how it's white. What the formula is. It seems kind of thick, but it's a liqueur, you know, just like De Sonora is.
De Sorona.
De Sorona. My Sharona.
You keep saying De Sonora. It's like, that's a great name. I just don't think it's right.
Well, I can't read Italian.
Exactly. I want to see, because it looks lovely. I just wonder if it's... Since it's like almond and coconut flavor, I just wonder if it's not actually dairy-based. It's so popular now.
I don't know, but not have
dairy in things. You would think that maybe they do that.
Well, like I say, I kept seeing the commercial. I thought, man, that looks good. I wonder if that tastes as good. And then my liquor store that I go to around for the corner from work, they had it there. I'd seen it the last time I was there, so I went to get it. And what was ironic is it's right next to the Nonino.
That they have.
And normally up until now, every time I go in, they'd have 2, maybe 3 bottles of Nonino. One time I got the last bottle they had, and I don't know whether it's because I keep buying it up or what, but this time when it went in, they had about 12 bottles of Nonino. So I think the paper plane craze has hit that place, because I think they order based on what goes.
They were absolutely ready for you.
Yeah. They had about 12 bottles, but I wasn't buying any. I was getting the Velvet.
Apparently it does have dairy in it. I looked it up, but that's all right.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. It would make sense, because like it's almond flavor. Why not just use almond milk? But whatever. Bailey says one of those. Well, that's cool. Did I have anything good to drink this week? Gosh, I don't know. I feel like it all just, I work behind a bar so much, but I don't ever go and drink nice things. I don't.
You make nice things, you just don't drink the nice things.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunately true of anything. Not this week, but hey, last week, pertaining to this week's episode, when I was home visiting y'all, got to go home for a couple days. It was a very short trip, just a little touchdown, one day there, one day turnaround.
Get to see SpongeBob.
Went to see SpongeBob the musical. But I did get to make some drinks. Whenever I come home, especially in the summertime, Mom likes to pick things from her garden and say, what can you do with this? And
berries, herbs, whatever.
Yeah. This most recent time, she had a whole bunch of delicious herbs. She had some thyme, some basil, some all sorts of stuff. But she had some berries, and she was calling them bramble berries. Like, can you make something with these bramble berries? And I'm not a berryologist. I don't know about different types of berries. It's like, well, they look like blackberries, but she's calling them bramble berries. And that makes me think of a cocktail that I've encountered before called a bramble. Why don't we make a bramble? And to me, and we'll get into the history of the cocktail because I'm very off base with what I thought a bramble was. But to me, what I thought a bramble was by way of seeing it on other menus and also working at a restaurant that had a bramble on the menu, my understanding of a bramble was it's something with muddled berries, blackberries or raspberries. Usually blackberries is what's in a bramble, but you can do a raspberry bramble. And the way I've seen it the most is with bourbon or whiskey, at least. So that's what I thought when you say a bramble, it entailed a cocktail made with muddled blackberries, maybe raspberries. And so that's what we did. We muddled her brambleberries with some herbs and with some whiskey and a basic sour build beyond that, you know, 2 3/4, 3/4 as far as lemon and simple. And they were great. They were delicious. But as we'll get into, because this episode is all about the bramble, the modern interpretation of the bramble is not historically accurate.
And I always just bramble to me never meant berries. Bramble to me was the thorns on the stems, you know, that the berries were on. That's what I always referred to as brambles, not the berries themselves.
Well, and that's the first thing that will it's good to explain that bramble is just, it's a bramble is like the bush. It's the mix of leaves and thorns that you get with a blackberry bush. So there is no specific bramble berry, so to say. There are the bramble berries could refer to blackberries or raspberries. Any berry that grows on a bramble is a brambleberry.
It reminded me of the old song that I used to like. It was the Battle of New Orleans. And they'd say he ran through the briars and he ran through the brambles. They ran through the thickets where the rabbits couldn't go. They ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch them. Down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Like that.
Just like that.
The inference being that brambles are something that you don't want to run through.
That's right.
So that's, you know, I was curious because anytime that I make a drink based off what I think is accurate knowledge, I remember that I learned from a lot of other bartenders, and a lot those other bartenders learned from other bartenders, and rarely do we stop and look at a book. So the actual bramble cocktail, to get into the history of that, it's a fairly recent drink. I think it's another one of those that we would qualify as a modern classic.
Absolutely.
Came about in the 80s, 1980s. And it was first made it comes to us from London, specifically a place called Fred's Club in Soho. And it was...
Not the most original name in the world, Fred's Club.
Fred's Club. It was made by someone who we've talked about before, actually, Dick Bratzel, who we talked about during the Espresso Martini episode. He was the creator of the Espresso Martini. The British Sam Ross, I guess, as far as someone in the modern era who has contributed several cocktails that have become modern classics in rapidity.
He has quite a list of drinks that he has originated and is given full credit for.
Yeah, and he's got a couple, like a handful more that's like it's worth looking into. He's a very, very prominent mixologist in his heyday. He's unfortunately no longer with us. He passed away from brain cancer a few years ago, but brilliant, brilliant bartender, smart guy. He went into his invention of the bramble with just sort of he wanted to make. I like there's a great you could there he's one nice thing about having modern classics is that you could go to the modern bartender that made them and get their whole creative process. And he's gone on like document talking about what he went through to create this cocktail. He's like, well, I wanted to make a British cocktail, like a quintessential British cocktail. And he's just like, I don't know why I wanted to do that, but it felt like a good thing to do. So of course I'm going to start with gin and okay, I'll do a gin sour, which he even then stipulates like, well, you know, like lemons aren't specifically British and a sour really isn't specifically British. And he went from there and like just happened to have a French liquor rep come in and try to sell him some different French spirits. You know, they were already like working with a lot of French spirits behind the bar, but specifically Crème de Mûre, which is a blackberry liqueur. And he thought, oh, this works great in my cocktail. That's also not British. So he set out to make a quintessential British drink. And none of the ingredients he actually chose outside of the gin really lined up to that. But he's like, well, whatever. It's a good drink. I don't care. So and when he first tried this French blackberry liqueur that this rep brought him, he was brought back to his memories of picking blackberries from the brambles as a young boy, like with his family in the countryside. And that it tastes so much like that memory that he knew he had to include it, whether or not it was brought about, it was created in, you know, if it was French or if it was British, it didn't matter. It belonged in this drink.
Well, growing up on the Isle of Wight, I think you pronounce that.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's wit or white, but I think it's white. W-I-G-H-T.
Mm. So it triggered a memory. And I guess that, I understand that. And it's like, if you're making a quintessential whatever, like a cocktail that represents where you grew up, It matters more that it has connections to you than necessarily it has connections to the soil. Maybe that comes first, but.
Well, it's just like your Ohio River Road cocktail that you made.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it used ingredients from all around the world, but it were flavors that I first encountered as a child growing up in West Virginia. And so that's part of the sense memory.
Yeah. And made you think of that, yeah.
So he wanted to include the Crème de Mûre in his drink. The way that he originally did it, and this is a cool detail too, when we're talking about the correct way to make a bramble, it's served over crushed ice, classically. And this is because, at the time, Fred's Club had an oyster bar. And if you've ever worked in an oyster bar, you know, that usually means that's the best way to have access to a crushed ice machine because you always have your oysters chilled over crushed ice. So he had like a pellet ice machine access, and he used that as the ice for the drink. So the first time he made it, he served it up. He tried it up and he was like, no, this is too cloying. There's too much sweetness. It's too tart. Then he tried it in a rocks glass, which is his favorite glass, over the crushed ice. And he thought that works a lot better. Like just kind of float the Crème de Mûre over top of it, let it kind of trickle down, almost bleed down into it. And that's the best way to make this drink. And it makes a lot of sense because that stretching out of the crushed ice, it kind of dilutes it quicker. It breaks up the sweetness a little bit more. That's the better way. And sometimes it is just that game of inches with cocktails. You know, the difference between serving a drink up in a coupe glass and it tastes terrible, serve it over ice and it's delicious. Sometimes that's all it takes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see how that would help a drink like that. Gin and sour, and add that in with over the crushed ice and make it good and cold and a little bit diluted.
Yeah. And also have a good like effect, you know, that liqueur just trickling over the crushed ice down into it, which is interesting because again, like as I've seen brambles, you usually start with muddled berries and basically build a sour over top of it. Like that's, as I learned a bramble, it's almost a class of cocktails in the same way that we talk about sours. It's like, this is a way you make a drink. A bramble is a way you make a drink. You muddle blackberries, and then you do a sour build over top of it, and the spirit base can change. So you can have a bourbon bramble, you can do a tequila bramble, you can do a gin bramble. But if we go back to the original bramble, there was a little bit more of a constraint to it, and it was a different drink. The berries were just a garnish on top. That's how he served it. He had the little volcano of crushed ice on top, and he thought, you know what would go right on top of this? Let's just sit two blackberries there. And that was the original drink.
And often a lemon slice too.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I think, and I've since doing the research for this, I've tried it both ways, and there's not, I don't think there's a superior way of doing it. They're just very different drinks. You know, the, if you do a classic Bramble, especially if you've got a good quality creme de mure, it's a little bit drier to begin with. It's got a little bit less viscosity. But I don't, there's not, with the fresh muddled blackberries, it's got a little bit more tannins, a little fresher, a little bit fruitier, but they both are delicious drinks. So there's no wrong answer there.
It seems like with the creme de mure, it'd be a little bit more, I don't know, a prettier drink when you serve it with that kind of trickling down through the ice and everything.
Yeah, it's a different presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to the creme de mure, if you're not familiar with it, let's stop a minute and just sort of talk about that. There's not a ton of history to it, but it is French in origin. It predates the Bramble by a while. It dates back to like the 1800s. And, you know, it's made with fresh blackberries, grain neutral spirit, and additional sugar. To put it in that, whenever we talk about creme de anything, the implication there is not that there's any dairy involved. There never is. It just means that there's a sugar quality high enough that it makes the liquor viscous by the amount of sugar in it.
Mm-hmm. And they use late harvest blackberries and macerate them into a neutral grape spirit.
Yep. And it's different. Some of the other things that you could honestly sub into a Bramble that would be similar, but to explain why they're not exactly the same. You know, a lot of times we talk about blackberry liqueurs, I think of Chambord, and Chambord is a black raspberry liqueur. It's similar, but it's not the same in that it's a little bit thinner. It's not quite as sweet. It's not quite as viscous. And along with that, like creme de cassis, it's, you know, raspberry, not blackberry. So there are, creme de mure is really its own thing, but there are things sort of tangential to it that you can sub in and get close to the same drink. It's just important to know why they're different.
Yeah. I mean, if you like different flavors or different berries, you can try some of those different things with the same formula and just use a different creme de liqueur.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, my favorite Bramble still, I do like, when you have the option, especially now we're in the heat of the summer, part of what also inspired this is like the cheap blackberries at all of my markets and bodegas right now, they're just everywhere. So if you can muddle fresh fruit, I think you should. And then, you know, toss in a little quarter ounce of some Chambord or some creme de mure, some creme de cassis. I think you get like a more nuanced Bramble that way by having both fresh fruit and liqueur. But it's, you know, there's the cocktail in its origin, which has a very specific recipe. And then there's the concept of a Bramble, which has kind of become its own thing. Everything in between is delicious.
I was looking at some of the different cocktails that Dick Bradsell had been credited with inventing. And by the way, one of the things that they talked about with the Bramble was that he was the undisputed inventor of that. That no one tried to claim they had done it earlier or done it or anything like that. But he was received a kind of what he called a left-handed compliment about it when some bartender said, well, there's no doubt that this is a good cocktail, but it's hard for me to believe a guy like you was clever enough to invent it. So I don't know what the impression was or whether it was the way he looked or he presented himself, that this guy made that statement, but he said he took it, and while it was an insult, he took it as a compliment because the guy was talking about how universally liked his drink had become.
Well, and I saw that. I think part of it too was just when you know, this is something you come across a lot in cocktail mythology. Like when you come across something that seems so obvious, it's right there. Like you couldn't have been the first person to do this. Somebody else did this and you're just stealing it. It's like, it makes sense. Like it's a gin sour with some berries, some berry liqueur. Somebody must have done that before, but he was the first person to do it and give it a snappy name and sell it at a bar that a lot of, I mean, you know, Fred's bar was, we joke about the name, but like, it was not a little, you know, dive bar. Like it was the kind of clientele he was serving. I mean, we're talking about Naomi Campbell, Boy George, Susie of Susie and the Banshees. Like he was making drinks for really famous people. And that's, to put it bluntly, that's the best way to get your cocktail in the books. Just work at a really nice restaurant, have a lot of famous people talk about your drink, and then it gets written down in recipe books. And he had that access.
Well, and he must have had a pretty good, I mean, he was clever as far as drinking, because I mean, he invented the espresso martini, the treacle, the Carol Channing, the Russian Spring Punch, and the Wibble. Have you ever had a Wibble?
I have not. I mean, I like that you, like, beyond the espresso martini and the Bramble, I like that you named all of those with equal fervor. Those are things that most of us have encountered.
Somebody has, probably. Yeah. You probably heard of one of those. Everybody's heard of one of them, maybe.
The rest of those are a little bit more off the beaten path. But yes, he was well known for his drinks. He made a lot of famous cocktails. He also, I mean, he was just kind of a beloved figure. You know, he was in this was weird, but he was in a Christopher Nolan movie. He was in The Following.
Yeah, he played the role of the bald guy.
Yeah.
That's what it said. But then the other thing that I read about him is that in 2003, him and Tony Conigliaro co-wrote several articles for a now-defunct bartending magazine called Theme. Now, Tony Conigliaro, people in Boston will probably know who that is. He was, back when I was a kid, he was like a third baseman or catcher or something like that for the Boston Red Sox.
Oh.
And he was famous because I wouldn't have known him otherwise. I only knew the famous guys, you know, and he had a fun name to say, Tony Conigliaro, you know, that's just a fun name. But his career, Tony Conigliaro's baseball career, ended when he was at bat one time and he got hit with like 100-mile-an-hour fastball right in the eye. And they had a picture of him on Sports Illustrated like a week after it happened. And oh my God, I'd never seen anything so horrible in my life as a kid. His eye was so swollen, it was like the eye was ready to come out. But he never played baseball again because he never got proper vision back in that eye. But Tony Conigliaro is one of those ones that when we're out playing sandlot ball, we're like, okay, I'm Tony Conigliaro. Okay, well, I'm Pete Rose, you know.
Wait, are you sure? Are you sure it's the same Tony Conigliaro?
I can't imagine there'd be too many other Tony Conigliaros. Can you?
Well, there was a British bartender and writer named Tony Conigliaro who wrote along with Dick Bradsell. So same name, different guy.
I thought sure it had to be the Tony Conigliaro. I know. You mean there's two Tony Conigliaros? I find that hard to believe.
And they both achieved some level of fame. I think that's true, Dad. Yeah. That was a great story. Don't get me wrong. That was cool. But I think that there's
you think it was
other,
a different one?
I think there was a British one. And he was just a bartender. Not just a bartender, but he was a bartender, not a baseballer.
Well, I figured maybe after he got hit in the eye, he spent a lot of time in bars. So he probably got good at drinks and, you know. This guy was a bartender, so he was picking up, you know, a common, ordinary guy to be a sidekick, just like you and me.
I don't think.
See, I'm the Tony Conigliaro of this equation. I just had my eye done. What kind of coincidence is that?
I mean, yes, but you were also like the real Tony Conigliaro, who is the mixologist. He was not a famous baseball player, and neither were you. So you have that in common.
I could play either part. I had done nothing.
Yeah. There are two different guys. I double checked that. But
I thought for sure it was a baseball player when I read that. I thought for sure it was him.
You not double check that? You're like, yep, gotta be that guy. Gotta be that guy.
Who else would be named Tony Conigliaro? That's not right. We had the original Tony Conigliaro. Those Brits shouldn't have been copying our Tony.
Well, you know, I don't know. There's enough room for two Tony Conigliaros in this world, I guess.
All right. Well, just disregard everything I said.
We got a good story out of it, so that's fine. It is funny to see a drink that's made in the 80s. Like, so we're talking after cocktail culture, during like the dark days of cocktail culture in America, so long after all of these the big drinks were established, that comes out and it catches on, and it's like, even that person that was like, no, there's no way you invented this, it's like, yeah, no, somebody else definitely did this. It's just he was the first one to write it down, which is always a story in bartending.
And he named it. You got to name him too.
And you got to name it something good. That's like other people. You run across the story so many times in bartending history where somebody else made the same drink. They named it something that wasn't cool. And then somebody else made the exact same drink and they named it something that was cool. And that's the drink that everybody remembers.
Like it's the paper plane.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you just, you got to name it something snappy. You got to have an easy to remember recipe, and you can't get mad when people do the same thing that you do, because that's how it works.
Yeah. Just like if somebody names their kid after you and you're a famous baseball player and they name their kid after you and you end up with the same name.
I don't think it was a kid. I think that the one was older than the other. I don't know. I didn't bring my baseball timelines to this episode, but I also think it is interesting that now Bramble has become a category. Like I so often see like Blackberry Bramble on a recipe or like Bourbon Bramble, and it's usually paired with whiskey, which I would honestly argue that I think that berries, specifically blackberries and raspberries, they work really well with bourbon or rye as a base spirit because they have tannins in their skin, very strong tannins, and those tannins really tie in with like the barrel age. Like you want a barrel age spirit to pair up with those tannins in the berries. So it makes more sense to me. I get why using gin in the original Bramble plays well, but I don't know. It's kind of taken on its own life because in the modern era where we tend to think Bramble means muddled berries, it tends to go best with spirits that have some tannic quality to it already, which means a spirit that has some barrel age on it. But I don't know. That's just process.
So basically make a whiskey sour and add the creme de mure to it.
Well, or just muddle some blackberries.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just thinking his was a gin sour, so.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. And that's where cocktails take on the life of their own. You know, the Bramble is a very specific, the specs are locked down, the ingredients are locked down. That is a specific cocktail. But then there's also the idea of a Bramble, which is one of those formulas that we use to make drinks. And they coexist, and that's fine, because bartending is full of contradictions.
That's right. And so am I.
So are you. So it's hot out, it's the heat of the summer, make yourself a Bramble, whatever kind, classic, nouveau, however you feel. It's a great drink for the hot months.
Have a drink to Tony Conigliaro.
Either Toasty. One, both.
Both. If you're in Boston, I know that. If you're in Boston, I bet you agree with me.
There's only one. I'm assuming there are two. If somebody wants to correct me and say this is the same man and he lived an incredibly interesting life, I just don't. That's true. But yeah, so there we go. There's our rundown of the Bramble. If you want to ask us questions or reach out to us on any form of social media, you can do that at neatboozcast@gmail.com. Ask us your questions, your comments. We have an Instagram at neatboozcast. If you want to go talk to other people about your favorite form of a Bramble, you can do that
at Meet the Boozcast group page on Facebook. We may even discuss your favorite Tony.
Go there, do that. Thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Tay, for having me. It's interesting, even when I'm on the wrong track.
This is a story. It doesn't matter. Always a pleasure. I've been Taylor Swirl.
I've been Tommy Swirl.
And this has been
me. my Tony Canigliaro story about Kyle. Oh, that's an odd parody. Oh, well, we'll just go with it.
I like that you saw that. It's got to be the same guy. No question.
Yeah, never crossed my mind there'd be another Tony Canigliaro. I mean, that's like thinking there's another Smurl. There's no other Tommy Smurl anywhere. If you hear about one, it's me.
But we know there are other Smurls.
I haven't met them.
Yeah, they're out there, though.
Well, so are the aliens. We haven't met them.
Okay, well, that's different.